accessing files in Adobe's Portable Document Format, or PDF, has been more of a cumbersome and hit-and-miss process for the blind than it is for the sighted. The files have to be put through email-based converters or read by a special plugin, often with mixed results. But substantial progress is being made in the accessibility of PDF documents. With Window Eyes 4.1, now in public beta, and Adobe's Acrobat Reader 5.0 in the latter stages of a private beta cycle, reading most PDF files will be no different from reading web pages. To tell me about this exciting development and other features in Window Eyes 4.1, I'm joined by Clarence Whaley of GW Micro, the people who make Window Eyes, and specifically to talk about Adobe Acrobat Reader 5.0, I'm joined by Rick Brown from Adobe. Rick, let me start with you and get you to talk a little, if you could, about the reason for the change from an Access plugin to this MSAA-based integration that's Microsoft Active Accessibility. Tell me a bit about why you've done that.
Well, there were a couple of things going on there. One was that the plugin, which we have available or have had available for free from Adobe.com and which works with the Acrobat Reader for Windows, was technically based on a model that would take the content of PDF and then convert it into an interim format, namely sort of plain text, and then that text could be accessed by an assistive technology like Window Eyes from GW Micro. The sort of twist in that solution was that we had to do a conversion process. We had to convert PDF to text. And what we have today now is the ability to speak directly from Acrobat and the content in the PDF right to a screen reader. And then, of course, we don't have that interim step, and the results can be much better.
So what does that mean for blind people in terms of the quality of their access to Adobe files?
What that means is, number one, it's going to be a lot simpler to use Acrobat Reader with an assistive technology. They don't have to get an additional program. They don't have to do something different than everybody else. They just go, they get the free Acrobat Reader, they use it with their screen reader. It should just work. The other thing we've done is that we've provided tools in the Acrobat 5.0 product, which we announced on March 12th, that will also optimize the content for accessibility. So PDF is like many other formats available on the web, similar to HTML. When you create that content, you really, if you want someone who's blind to have the best experience with it, you need to, as the author, make sure you're sort of doing the right things. You have to author with the intent for accessibility. And we've provided several tools in Acrobat 5.0 that make it easier for you to do that so that people get that content in PDF, and as you know, in a PDF file, PDF has very arbitrary ideas of layout and graphics, and you could have text all over the page, and it's hard even for people who are sighted. Sometimes, you know, if you look at a complex document like a form, what is the logical reading order? How do you know what that is? And Acrobat 5.0 gives you features that enable you to encode through logical structure what the logical reading order is. And now we can expose that through what we're supporting in Acrobat 5.0 to a screen reader like Window Eyes, and that means that someone who's blind can not only access the text, but they're getting it in the logical order the way the author intended.
Now, in an Adobe Acrobat PDF file, you often find that there's lots of hyperlinking going on. So you might see a table of contents, and a sighted person can jump quickly from the table of contents to the particular item that they're interested in. Can a blind person do that through this implementation?
Oh, yes. It's very similar to the way you would deal with links in a web browser.
Right. So you'd effectively be, if the MSAA model of the screen reader, such as Window Eyes, is implemented so that you tab between links on a web page, you'll effectively be tabbing between links on a PDF file.
Another thing we can expose is Acrobat has a concept of what are called bookmarks, which are not to be confused with, you know, the bookmarks you have in your web browser, but there's a separate panel that can have, the author can create a set of hyperlinks that sort of exist in a separate panel so that I can, through, you know, tabbing mechanisms, tab into that panel to get sort of an overview of the links in the file if they're created that way, and then I can browse through the links that way as well.
Let me bring Clarence Whaley in at this point. Clarence, as well as being the Director of Sales and Marketing for GW Micro, you're a blind person and a window eyes user yourself. Have you been a part of the private beta testing process for this?
Yes, I have, Jonathan, and it's very, very exciting, and everything Rick said is true. What happens is it's just as easy now to read a PDF document as it is to browse the web. And if there are hyperlinks to a particular item, you simply tab to that link and hit enter, and away you go. So it's really wonderful to be able to see a PDF document the same as our sighted counterparts see it now.
So WindowEyes 4.1, public beta 1, has already been released, and that's all ready to go with this new technology, I take it?
That's correct. We're ready to go, thanks to the fine folks at Adobe and to Bill Smith, one of our developers who has done amazing work with Adobe to make all this possible. And to give you an example, Jonathan, my cell phone manual is in PDF form, and it was amazing how much of that I missed when converting it to plain text. So there's wonderful ways to get around the document now with Acrobat 5.0 and WindowEyes 4.1. I can jump immediately to sections. And this was not a document that was especially created with the new features in mind. It just wonderfully works.
Now, while we don't want to underestimate the significant achievement that we're talking about here, there are still some fishhooks. For example, I take it that a lot of these manuals have graphical symbols to represent the keys on a cell phone, let's say, that you have to press. I take it we're still shut out in that regard if there's no text equivalent.
Unfortunately, that is correct, and it's going to be very much up to the developers in the future of documents that they give us some type of alt-tag equivalent to those buttons so that we do know what those buttons are.
If I could interject, one of the great things about the 5.0 release is, in fact, it now provides tools for applying alternate text to graphics in a PDF file. So one of the things Clarence mentioned was that, you know, there's lots of Adobe PDF files out there on the web, and the good news is Acrobat 5.0's accessibility features work with any legacy PDF. But as I mentioned before, we also have tools that allow you to optimize them so that they can be even better. And one of the things we've added is a way to scan the file. We have actually a tool in Acrobat 5.0 called the Accessibility Checker. And it will automatically run through a PDF file and tell you whether or not it can detect problems with the file that might prevent it from being optimally accessible. And one of the things it can check for is, are there images in the file, and do they have alternate text or not? And if not, it can tell you that, it can show you where they are, and there are tools in there to allow you to apply an alternate description, textual description, to an image or graphic.
Is it the whole 508 thing that's been motivating quick development on this, the fact that Adobe was a bit concerned about being shut out of some U.S. government programs because of accessibility issues?
Well, certainly that was, I think if we look what's happened over, let's say, the last 12 months, I think there have been sort of several factors that have catalyzed the market for developers like Adobe. There was the issue between America Online and I think it was the National Federation of the Blind. There's been, obviously, the pending Section 508 regulation, which is going to go into effect in June of this year. But keep in mind that, I mean, we have had the Access plugin, for example, since 1997, and we've had some online conversion tools since the same time frame at our website called access.adobe.com. So we have been in this space and looking at a good, you know, making the solutions better for a while now. But certainly with Section 508 and the overall sort of greater awareness of accessibility vis-a-vis the web, you know, this was a good time frame to get it in there.
Are you planning to continue?
Go
on, Clarence.
All credit to Adobe, Jonathan. We started talking with them probably ago, and it was their desire to make this happen long before all the need to be with everything with 508. So they wanted to do this, and we wanted to work with them to make this possible. Selfishly, as a blind person, I wanted this to happen. And Adobe wanted this to happen for us, too. So I think a lot of credit goes to them.
Rick, will you be continuing with PDF to TXT and those other conversion options once 5.0 is released?
Yes, we will continue to support those services. Vis-a-vis specifically sort of screen reader and refreshable braille displays, et cetera, our strategy right now is centered around the MSAA API, which is a Microsoft API. It's Windows only. We're very fortunate in that the GW Micro folks had already done some work there, so they were very helpful to us in implementing it. It's been a real team effort working with them. So there are, people who might be on a Unix platform or something like that. We will continue to provide the conversion services for them so that they can get access. But the really good news is that those conversion services are going to work a lot better now because we now have the ability to prepare those PDF files with all the tools I mentioned so that if they do get converted, Clarence mentioned a lot of the things that had been missed before in the conversion. We can address a lot of those problems now, so the conversion services are going to get sort of an upgrade as a result of all the things we can do to optimize those PDF files now.
You are obviously going to have to get involved in a bit of education, I presume, of the people who actually make the PDF files, because, of course, we've had the ability to do alt text since HTML was invented, and a lot of people still just don't bother, I think mainly out of ignorance than anything else. Do you have any strategy in mind for actually getting the word out to PDF file writers that this should be done and how easy it is to do it?
Yes, so first of all, I would agree with your assessment that even though I feel there's been an increasing awareness of the issue overall in the market, we're not even close to the point where we can think about not trying to educate people about the issue. And as I mentioned before, accessibility is not just about the software vendors improving their tools. It's also about people who are the content creators getting better tools, but also knowing what to do once they have them. And one of the things we've done, for example, is we've created a guidebook called How to Create Accessible Adobe PDF Files, which sort of a supplement to the content we provide in our standard documentation. We'll have it both in print and in accessible Adobe PDF format, and it will give you sort of all the tips and tricks and the do's and don'ts that you can do, and we'll continue to distribute that and make that available to our customers as much as we can. But you're absolutely right that at the end of the day, the person creating the content sort of is the last person to touch it, and if they don't do all the right things, it's going to be another sort of barrier in the way for someone with a disability, and we need to provide as many options as we can.
Yeah, because we did a major feature on the new version of SoundForge, the digital sound editor from Sonic Foundry, a few weeks ago, and a number of us were somewhat disappointed to note that it is actually possible to lock blind people out of PDF files, which Sonic Foundry has done in this instance. I'm interested if you can go into why that's allowed to happen and why you think Adobe PDF file developers do it.
Well, so for the benefit of our customers, number one, I imagine it's got to be through ignorance. I'd be surprised if they're doing it intentionally. There are a couple of features in Acrobat that can enable someone to unintentionally create a PDF file that's inaccessible. One is that there are some security features that one of the things you can do with a PDF is you can copy the text from a PDF to reuse it in another application. And some customers do that, they want to, here's an interesting bit of information, I want to put it in my word processor or an email, or I want to send an email to Clarence and say, hey, did you see this? Because we have security features, you can disable that permission on a PDF by PDF file basis. So maybe I don't want anyone to copy text, and that I haven't seen the document you're talking about, but maybe they did that. Because of the way the old Access plugin worked. Basically, what the Access plugin is doing is copying all the text out of a PDF and presenting it in another format. So we had to make the hard decision of saying, you know what, if someone has disallowed copying text, then we will not let it work with the Access plugin. And that was Adobe's decision, because we were concerned that someone might then use the Access plugin in an inappropriate way to circumvent somebody's security settings. Now, we then had to have been making an effort to educate our customers of the ramifications of doing that. In the 5.0 release, we've given you the option now to disallow copying text, but allow compatibility with the MSAA interface, which speaks to WindowEyes. So we've tried in 5.0 to give you kind of the best of both worlds. That being said, we still have to educate people about it. The other thing you can do in PDF, and this happens as well, is that a lot of people will take existing paper-based documents and scan them in as a scanner, on a scanner, and then just sort of convert them to a PDF file. But all they're doing is just taking a picture, a bunch of bitmaps, and converting them to PDF. And obviously, you know, that's totally useless to someone that might have a disability, since there is no real text there. And that's another common mistake that people make.
Is it easy for a blind person to write a PDF file?
So I can say that what we've done in the 5.0 release is we have, number one, put our number one effort on making sure that the free reader, which is used for viewing and printing and sort of the basic navigation of PDF files, is optimized from a usability point of view and a compatibility with screen readers like WindowEyes point of view. So that's not really a creation tool. We have tried in the full product, which allows you to not only view PDF and to read them, but to also create them, to make that easy as well. Now, for example, one thing we've done is we have a macro that if you install Acrobat 5.0 and you have Microsoft Office like Word 97 or Word 2000, we will install that macro into your Word product. So if you can use Word, you can probably fairly easily create a PDF file. But we've done the majority of our testing from a usability point of view and compatibility with WindowEyes around the free reader. We wanted to make sure we got that right first.
And you've chosen Microsoft Active Accessibility in the Windows platform. Was there any debate about that? Any other alternatives looked at? Because I note that really outside of Microsoft, there aren't that many full applications that have adopted Active Accessibility.
Well, there was a lot of discussion. As Clarence mentioned, we've been working with GW Micro for about 2 years now. And we had several choices. And Clarence, as I go through this, feel free to jump in and offer your own opinion. But we felt there were a couple of things we could do. One, we felt that we could make Acrobat what's, you know, called a self-vocalizing application, which is that we could contain all the speech synthesis all inside Acrobat, have it kind of solve that problem by itself. We thought that there was a good side and a bad side to doing that. The good side would be that we wouldn't have to worry about communicating with another tool like an assistive technology. We could contain that within ourselves. We know our application very well. We could probably make that a very rich experience. We felt the downside of doing that was that, number one, that's not really Adobe's core competency from a technology point of view. So we would not be very efficient, or, you know, we'd kind of be reinventing the wheel there, since companies like GW Micro have already solved that problem. Number two, from a practicality point of view, it struck us that, and I think, you know, Clarence pointed this out to us, if I have a disability and I need to use an assistive technology, I probably want a more general purpose tool that's going to kind of solve that problem for everything on my desktop and not have all my applications talking all at once. You know, we talked about having to invent what we called the shut-up API. It's like, how would Acrobat know when to stop talking if something else was going on? And so we really felt it would be much better for the customer if we could come out with a more general purpose solution that would work with something they already had, like WindowEyes. And that way, we come to market, it just sort of works, and it works the way they're used to working. They don't have to learn a new tool. They can use it with WindowEyes or something like that.
That's a really good point. All the keystrokes that WindowEyes users are used to in navigating the Internet work with the Adobe. The insert tab to pull up a list of links, arrowing down through a document with the inverted T arrow keys, all the keystrokes that our users use every day in Internet Explorer are there for Adobe, and there's nothing new to learn. And I think that's a really good point about the Shut Up API. I like that because so many times self-talking applications get in the way of screen readers. And very significantly, we know what we're doing with MSAA. Our developers are very, very familiar, so it was an easy transition for us to pass our knowledge along of the MSAA API to Rick's company so that working together we could produce this type of product.
The other thing was we were trying to think about the ultimate customer, because another option we had was, well, we would create our own API, our own accessibility API that could, you know, serve as a way of Acrobat talking to an assistive technology. And again, the benefit of that would be, well, we understand our application very well. We could probably create a very robust, complete API. But we felt that the real downside there would be then we would have to go to someone like GW Micro and say, here's another API you have to support. You have to rewrite your product. You have to convince your customers to buy it and upgrade to it. And, you know, that just seemed like that was probably the worst possible choice from the actual customer point of view. It would force them to buy an upgrade. It would force the developer to have to change their development strategy. And when we had started talking to GW Micro, they were already on board with doing the MSA support. So it was like, hey, you're going there, we're going there. This seemed like the best possible solution for us.
So have you guys...
Why people have enough keystrokes to memorize that one, Jonathan?
Too right.
Yeah. Well aware.
I certainly empathize with that comment.
Right.
Rick, have you guys found implementing MSAA into your reader application a rewarding, easy experience?
Well, the good news is that I can honestly not answer that question because I wasn't the engineer that did the work.
Fair enough. Very diplomatic.
That looks good.
All right. One thing we mustn't forget to cover also is the fact that the new access that we have to Adobe Files also makes form filling much easier. Can you, first of all, Rick, we'll ask you about that, and then we'll talk to Clarence about his experience from a user's perspective.
Yes. Well, for a while you've been able to create Adobe PDF files that were live electronic forms, just like an HTML form. And so it was one of the design objectives of the 5.0 release to make sure that those were just as accessible as any other part of the content in a PDF file. And what's nice about the way we implemented the forms is not only can you get into them and type into them and have that experience be very accessible through WindowEyes, but we have the ability to include, as you're creating the forms, if you're the author of the form, to include sort of the equivalent of an alt tag, which we have a little short description tag you can assign to each form so that it can give you something that you might not necessarily get. You know, we have lots of visual clues. If we're cited in filling in a form, we understand the context of the form. In this way, instead of just having something read to you like Social Security number, you could have also a description that says, please enter your Social Security number, you know, at this point in time or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Clarence, what's been your experience on the WindowEyes side?
It's really been great because filling out a form with PDF now is as easy as it is on the Internet. And it's just as simple. And like Rick said, there's a way now to label that form, for instance, Social Security number, and you can actually say should be entered in this format, three digits, et cetera. So filling out forms is really easy, and if our users are used to filling out forms on the Internet, it's the very same process. Again, no new keystrokes to learn.
So what happened?
Very pleasant experience.
Do you turn MSAA mode off for that, Clarence? You tab to a form field and press Enter?
I haven't experimented that much Jonathan, but if they're using 4.1, if they press enter to start filling out the form, and when they hit the submit button, MFAA will toggle back on.
Excellent. So that's a really significant development, isn't it? Because there are so many government forms, for example, around the world that are using PDF format.
Yes, there are. And being able to fill out those forms online, just like anybody else, is a real breakthrough in access, I believe.
Can I ask you about e-books? Because there's a lot of talk about e-books around the place at the moment, and blind people want access to those because, of course, we are information deprived, particularly when it comes to reading the latest bestsellers. I take it that this version 5 doesn't deal with the e-book question, because I think your e-book reader is a separate product, but is similar access on the way for that?
Yes, so I'll have to be a little vague here because I'm not as up to speed on all our products as I am on the Acrobat stuff. But there is the Adobe eBook Reader, and that has a function called Read Aloud. Now, that Read Aloud function is a self-vocalizing function right now. And the big concern in the eBook space is this whole idea of controlling intellectual property. We've all probably heard about what's going on with Napster. And obviously the people who are doing ebook publishing, while they're very excited about the opportunity presented by ebooks, in particular the, you know, as you've mentioned, the fact that they're already creating this content, it's very easy for them to get it into Adobe PDF, because creating an Adobe PDF is just an incremental change to a pre-existing publishing workflow. And it makes it real easy to say, here's a book I'm going to publish anyway. I can get into electronic format. I can sell it electronically. Now that it's electronic, it can become accessible, et cetera. But they also want to, they're, I think, very concerned about doing that in a way that minimizes the risk to someone misappropriating their intellectual property. And I think that's probably the thing that concerns them the most. That's why in the Acrobat 5.0, we're trying to develop an ultimate strategy that would allow you to both have security settings but still have compatibility with assistive technologies. So to sort of summarize, the ebook reader does have a read aloud function that is a sort of self-contained self-vocalization function, and I think it's based on some real basic screen reading technology in the OS. So from a sort of performance and quality and functionality point of view, it's, you know, nothing compared to what you would get through something like WindowEyes. I think the big issue going forward is making sure we can make the publishers feel comfortable with the intellectual property issues.
Mm. I actually had a listener email me about the ebook reader and the read aloud function, saying that she's had considerable success with it. But one of the dilemmas is that it's not always clear when you buy an ebook whether the publisher has chosen to disable the read aloud feature or not. And so sometimes you can download the book having purchased it and find that it's not going to work for a blind person.
That's true. And the other thing we're trying to do, you know, as I mentioned before, is it's all the preparation at the back end to make sure that even if it is set to read aloud, that it's going to do so in a successful way. So we also have to educate the people in the ebook space about optimizing their content for accessibility and about all the tools we're providing in the 5.0 release to help them get there. So I think we've made the step in the right direction, but I would say in the ebook side, we're not nearly as far along as we are in the more general purpose applications of Acrobat.
When are we going to be able to get our hands on this technology? Are you planning a public beta before release, or are we just going to wait till the release date?
Well, we've done a private beta, and we've had great participation with GW Micro, and I feel very good about the testing we've done there. We're not going to do a public beta. Historically, we have done some public betas of the free Acrobat Reader, but we feel pretty good about it. We expect to have the accessible version of the Reader posted sometime probably in mid-April. So basically in mid-April, we'll throw the doors open and say, come and get it from the Adobe.com website. And we've also been trying to optimize, if you've been up there lately, we have the whole download page. We have an alternate page that's been optimized for accessibility to make it easier for people to download it.
You had a comment there, Clarence?
On the GW Micro side, Jonathan, our public beta 4.1 is ready to go. with Adobe, and I will be showing Acrobat 5.0 and WindowEyes 4.1 at CSUN in Los Angeles next week. So anyone who wants to see it can stop by our booth there. And Rick can address this, but it will also be shown at FOSSI, the big show in D.C., starting next week. So it's going to be available for people to see, to download. Ours is available now in public beta, but the actual 5.0 from Adobe, not yet.
And Rick, Clarence isn't going to like me for asking this question, but we do have a few listeners that use other screen readers. And can you just talk to me a bit about functionality with other screen readers than WindowEyes with Adobe Reader 5?
Yes, so we are working with other vendors. We haven't announced all the ones we're working with, but primarily the other one is the Freedom Scientific JAWS product. So should expect hopefully in the future that there'll be versions of JAWS that are compatible with Acrobat.
That's tremendous.
And if I can comment on the other screen readers, I think that's absolutely wonderful from a blind person's point of view, and also from GW Micro. I think the one thing that's been missing in our lives is blind people having a choice in what screen reader they use. So I'm actually delighted to hear that Adobe is working with JFW, and I think that will just offer all of us more solutions.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about solutions then, Clarence, because there'll be a few people who haven't gone to the website yet and found out all the good news. Can you tell us a few of the things that particularly excite you about 4.1, which has now gone into public beta of WindowEyes?
Yes, I certainly can. Top of which is our working with Adobe and the Acrobat 5.0, which we've talked a lot about. Also, we will be adding support for Grade 2 Braille in this release. That isn't in the first public beta, but it will be in the second.
Let me stop you there, because your Braille support has really got people very excited, hasn't it? I think that there has been universal acclaim for the way in which GW Micro has implemented its Braille support. I mean, I've got to say, it was a long time coming, but now that it's here, it's extremely good Braille support.
Absolutely. I have not seen any Braille support from any other screen reader that even comes close, and I've tried them all, obviously.
Mm.
And we offer more flexibility, more power, more usability, and now with adding Grade 2 support, it's even going to be better. It's really nice, and I keep getting asked, Jonathan, why Braille support? Why is it so important? And when you talk to blind people who work in call centers where they need to look at information and make sure that they're giving the information exactly and correctly, it's very, very nice to put your hands on a long account number or an email address or some confidential information. So that's where Braille really makes the difference.
I think also, Clarence, that you pick up different kinds of errors when you read with speech and Braille. At least I do. I find that often if I read something in Braille, I'll pick up some sort of issue that is quite different from when I'm getting it orally.
Absolutely. Synthesizers are very forgiving, and you hear something and you think, well, that's okay. But if you're actually looking at it, the truth comes out and you see where you misspelled or you didn't format as you meant to.
Mm. All right. So what else other than the exciting new Braille features?
Table support for Internet Explorer. Those complicated tables that are on the web now are a piece of cake, such as airlines being able to read airline schedules, any information that's presented in long, complicated tables are now readable with just a couple of keystrokes. So we're very excited about our table support for Internet Explorer, and that's in the beta that can be downloaded today. Also, we are giving people the ability to read those nasty, before unusable progress bars when installing an application, or something that lets a progress bar crawl along the screen. Before, we just had to guess whether an application was really installing or not. But now with one keystroke, WindowEyes can tell you that you're 60% completed or whatever, and it doesn't give you that information unless you ask. Nothing would be more annoying than to hear it repeating over and over. So on request, you can ask. Also, there are a lot of applications that flash on the taskbar wanting your attention. We now read that to you once, and if you miss that information, you can use a hotkey to go say, what was that flashing information?
I must say, I was quite impressed with this. I was having a play with this morning, and MSN Messenger was running. And, for example, if you were sending me a message with MSN Messenger, it would just suddenly say to me, Clarence Whaley wants attention. And, of course, we'd always give you some attention if you want some, Clarence. So, very impressive feature.
It is a very impressive feature, and you can be off doing something else. You can be reading email, and if MSN Messenger pops up, as Jonathan said, it's right there, and it tells you that I want attention, or whomever wants your attention. And if you're in another application and you're using Eudora, for example, and something happens in Eudora, WindowEyes will say Eudora wants attention. Tooltips often pop up, and you didn't understand that tooltip, or you want to hear it again, we have a hotkey in 4.1 to go back and reread that tooltip for you. The other exciting thing we've done, Jonathan, is we have worked more and more on our rock solid. Our goal is to be 100% rock solid. And every time someone calls us and says, WindowEyes is crashing here, we stop the presses. And we work very diligently until we find that crash and we can eliminate it. So every day our goal is to be the most rock-solid screen reader out there. We're not there. We're not perfect. But by nibbling away at these little GPS and errors, we will be. And we want those days of the blue screen to go totally away.
You've done some very nice things with speech synthesis as well. I note that you can now at last save the individual speech settings for your different synthesizers. For example, if I switch from the DeckTalk XS32 to the Keynote SA, the speech parameters that I was using on the DeckTalk are totally inappropriate for the Keynote SA. Now it's possible to save those different settings for each synthesizer.
That's correct, and that's a request that comes from our users. They folks, we really do listen, and that's very important. For instance, I want my double talk at one rate, pitch, and tone. I want eloquence at another. That's something that's now doable in 4.1, and even more importantly, a lot of us have been changing synthesizers. We get distracted, and we accidentally choose a synthesizer that we don't have. Guess what? WindowEyes quits talking, and you just have to get lucky to reinstall a synthesizer that you have. Well, along the Rock Solid efforts, we have added an option to set up a default synthesizer so that no matter how badly you mess up your speech synthesizer, if you choose something you don't have, you can reload WindowEyes with your default synthesizer, and it will always come up talking, so you will always have speech.
Mm. You mentioned the table support for Internet Explorer a little earlier. That table support, is it going to find its way into Microsoft Word? Because I think that's one of the biggest feature requests I've seen from GW Micro is table support in Word.
Yes, it will find its way into Microsoft Word. Obviously not for version 4.1, but it certainly will. And we started with Internet Explorer because that was what we have worked on more closely than anything else. And all of our users said, well, give it to us in Internet Explorer first and then in the other Office products. So in order to get 4.1 out the door in beta on March 12th and an actual release on April 17th, we had to stop at some point. But yes, it will be coming soon.
Is there a way for people who are currently using another screen reader who are sort of tempted by the feature set that you've just outlined to try the beta as a demo?
Absolutely. Anyone can download the beta. They first must download the demo version of WindowEyes 4.0, which can be downloaded from www.gwmicro.com/demo, which will install WindowEyes 4.0. Then they can go to www.gwmicro.com/beta and download the beta and install it right on top of it. And like all of our demos, it will run for 30 minutes at a time, and then all you have to do is reboot your computer. And it will run forever as a demo. We hope people won't do that, but it will. There is no days limitation. The only limitation is the 30-minute timeout.
And an existing 4.0 registered user would just download and install over the top of their 4.0?
That is correct. All they would have to do, is download and install the beta. The beta will time out at some point in the future, but that's well explained in the README file. And they will have a full working version until it times out in X number of days.
How much will you charge 4.0 users for an upgrade to 4.1?
The upgrade is $50 US, and that will give them the CD to for 4.1. There are very, very minor changes in the manual, so there is no new manual. It will all be in the README file.
And are you taking orders for that now, or should people wait until April the 17th until they phone the office?
Absolutely. We are taking orders starting today, and people can call and get their name on the list and pay their $50, and theirs will be some of the first to ship out the door.
Excellent.
And Jonathan, if I can make one other minor announcement here, and I say minor, I really want to say major. At the request of our users, we are going to be offering an SMA. We've had a lot of agencies, a lot of individuals saying, why doesn't GW Micro offer a software maintenance agreement? We will be starting today. People who own 4.1 can buy a software maintenance agreement for the next 3 upgrades to WindowEyes.
How much is that going to cost?
The upgrade or the SMA will be $249. That will entitle them to 3 upgrades. And we are offering an introductory offer for the SMA. If they buy it between now and May 17th, the price for the 3 upgrades is $199.
Define an upgrade for me.
A major upgrade is any upgrade that we charge for. Typically, our upgrades in the past have been $75 or $100. And anytime we add major features to WindowEyes, it is a paid upgrade. That's not to say that along the way we will not have some free upgrades. And as you know, we have many times in the past offered free upgrades. But any paid major upgrade can be taken off of their software maintenance agreement account.
Now, if you offer a free upgrade and somebody with Internet access can download that free upgrade from the web, is a software maintenance agreement user going to be charged shipping for the CD?
Yes. And we make that very plain in our agreement, that they can either download the upgrade free of charge, but if they want the actual CD, there will be a charge for that. And we are offering to let them use an SMA account to pay for the cost of the CD and shipping, but we are encouraging them that that's not in their best interest.
All right. So if the shipping cost really is a problem, you are at liberty to take one off your SMA account.
That is correct. They can take it off of their SMA account if they choose to, if they just absolutely do not have the money.
Clarence Whaley of GW Micro, and earlier we were speaking with Rick Brown from Adobe. Now, just a few hours before this program went to air, we received a press release from Freedom Scientific on this same subject, and so as a matter of balance, we'll read you the relevant parts of that release. It says, Freedom Scientific Inc., a leader in assistive technology products for people with vision impairments and learning disabilities, announced today that JAWS for Windows 3.7 screen reader software will provide users the ability to read Adobe Portable Document Format, PDF files, directly from within Adobe Acrobat 5.0 software. Freedom Scientific will make this capability available as a free download for current JAWS 3.7 users. This is targeted to coincide with the distribution date of the Adobe 5.0 software in April. When complete, JAWS will read Adobe PDF files as easily as internet web pages. It will be compatible with all Microsoft Windows operating systems, including Windows 95, 98, ME, as well as Windows NT and Windows 2000 Professional. The announcement comes less than a year after developers from both companies began working to make their products work in tandem to provide greater opportunities for computer users who are blind or with low vision. Until now, Adobe PDF files were not easily accessible through screen readers such as JAWS. As the standard for distribution of final form documents on the internet, the accessibility of Adobe PDF with JAWS software will be the culmination of a cooperative effort between Freedom Scientific and Adobe Systems to help thousands of people who are blind or with low vision. Glenn Gordon, Vice President and Chief Technical Officer, Freedom Scientific, said computer users with vision impairments will have the opportunity to access a growing number of Adobe PDF documents, ranging from IRS forms to product catalogs. People who are blind or with low vision will be able to use JAWS to access Adobe PDF files with the same ease as they do HTML, Gordon said. This can be accomplished without special plugin requirements by enabling JAWS to gather the information behind the files as it reads it through a speech synthesizer or a refreshable braille display on a regular PC. We've worked closely with Freedom Scientific on this important initiative and will continue to move forward, said Sarah Rosenbaum, Group Product Manager of Acrobat Adobe. As a result of our combined efforts, we are pleased to say that individuals with visual impairments will be able to use Acrobat 5.0 with JAWS to access and experience the advantages inherent in Adobe PDF files. When available, current JAWS for Windows 3.7 users will be able to access the free download from the Freedom Scientific website at www.freedomscientific.com.